Hello everybody, it's Mark Fox here from Grapple Arcade, once again back with BBG Wrestling to present another episode of NWA Power. The review the night after, I suppose. The review the night after. I'm joined again by Richard Fox. How are you doing, Rich?
Hello, mate. Not too bad.
Good. So to start off with, I thought we'd do a bit of a roundup, actually, of what's been announced over the last week or two. NWA have announced a pay-per-view on Fight, and that will be the Into the Fire pay-per-view in Atlanta, Georgia.
Into the fire!
It's a beauty, isn't it? That song is such a beast. It works so well. within Atlanta, Georgia, on December the 14th, which is sold out. Then they're also doing an NWA Power taping on December the 15th, which is sold out. And then they're doing another event on December the 16th, which have got less than 40 tickets remaining. They're doing bloody well.
Not bad. I think they can say the first month is a success.
I think, to be honest with you, it speaks volumes of what everybody's currently harping on about online in terms of how much they're enjoying it. I tell you what they're doing incredibly well as well. They're dangling lots of carrots for people to get involved in order to tweet positivity and, you know, sort of speak positively about NWA online. And rightly so they should. Why shouldn't they? Because it's been really fun so far, and positivity is what it fully deserves. But they're kind of promoting that, yeah, come on, let us know what you think by putting these little sort of snapshots on at the beginning and just pre the NWA Power Show starting by highlighting positive tweets and things like that that the public are saying. I think that's leading to more people wanting to engage with them online, which is just marketing genius, really. It's very simple. It's straightforward.
It is a really clever idea, because it gives you that thing of allowing guys to feel included in it. And everybody's aim is to try and get their tweet put on at the beginning of the show now as well, try and see their own name come up there and let everybody else see it. So it's that thing with social media, you know, you put something out there and you want to get as many likes as you can. And having that come up on a YouTube video that has, you know, hundreds and thousands of views, it's brilliant for those people who are really socially, you know, social media active. So really encourages them doing it. Whoever thought of it, it was an absolutely cracking idea.
I'm wondering if they've actually reached out potentially, I might be wrong, but potentially either beforehand to a few social media names, if you like. I know that Wrestling Days has been on the scene for a while doing his reviews and things. He's great at what he does, and he is the guy who is doing the watch-alongs at the beginning when you see the intros to Power. The guy's doing the watch-alongs, and he's always incredibly highly excited about whatever's going on in his life. He's like, oh my god, like, and that's who he is. That's genuinely kind of what his crack is. And you know, it created excitement even seeing people like that excited. So I'm wondering if they've maybe reached out a few people, or they've just maybe sort of had, so you know, said get involved to X amount of people, and they have done, and it's created that buzz, and then lots of other people. Maybe they haven't. Maybe it's all natural. And either way, it's a winner. You know, it's working well for them.
Won't you have The Rock tweeting about it as well? You know, one of his tweets went on there, so you could have the opportunity to have your tweet alongside The Rock's.
It's a wonderful picture for people, and people are soaking it all up. I'm glad they are, because it's creating a buzz, and everybody's happy at it being on YouTube and available to watch. So it's great interaction with the fans, and as you say, it creates that buzz and genuine feeling of being involved and included. Starting with the show then, well, actually, sorry, one more snippet of news, actually. Dave Lagana, after the show had aired, and, you know, I think it was actually some point today, a few hours ago, is reported that episode 4, being the one last night, has the highest average watch time out of all of the NWA Power episodes so far. So, in other words, in layman's terms, more minutes of episode 4 have been watched overall compared to other episodes. That doesn't necessarily mean it's had as many views just yet, but what it means is that it has had more watch time, so people haven't skipped bits or anything like that. They're soaking more of the actual content up rather than skipping segments or anything like that, which again is it's a really interesting thing to announce. You don't tend to see things like that, but it shows you how involved they are with social media and the community. They're tapping into what people who are in the know know about what matters when it comes to things like YouTube streaming. It's not always about how many views it's had. It's about how much of that view has been watched in terms of people soaking up content. And I think that's just a really interesting thing that they're highlighting. I quite enjoyed that personally. That
I'm well up on my YouTube statistics like that. I mean, I said at the end of the last episode about them surpassing 100,000 views at the time of recording. At the time, they hit over 100,000 views for episode 3. They've already done it again for episode 4 as well. So, you know, less than 24 hours removed. Over 100,000 again, and with that metric that you said there of the longest average time of watching as well out of the 4 episodes, absolute roaring success. I can't imagine they. I'd like to know what their aims were going into it in terms of view count. I know that's a very, very basic metric to go off, but of those sort of metrics, I'd like to know what they considered their benchmarks to be. Because yeah. I would guarantee that this has far surpassed them. I think it's caught on. And when you look at, you know, I don't want to harp on to things like Reddit and stuff like that, because a lot of it's dog shit, but everything that I read about it on sites like that and a lot of wrestling forums and what have you, everybody is absolutely singing the praises. I've seen little to no critique about it or negatives about it. And it's just shown that it's just so much filled that void that we didn't even know was missing. And that's why the novelty of it when it first started was there. And now when you're into episode 3 and episode 4 now, it's no longer a novelty. It's a routine show. And it's still smashing it out the park.
Definitely. I think what's interesting about it is, as you touched on there, that everybody is speaking very positively about it. Now that we're on episode 4, it's not just the sort of episode 1, all the interesting things that happen. I think any of the critiques that happen are more of personal interest and they're more valid based on that person's opinion rather than it being, let's slate them because of the opposition or we don't like that wrestler or whatever it may be. People are genuinely giving them a chance for who they are and what they're showing. And because they are generally showing very positive episodes, very, very popular episodes, very well put together and well wrestled episodes of an hour of wrestling, people appreciate that and they're showing it and being vocal about it. And it goes to show you that's sometimes all you need to do as a wrestling promotion is put on a simple good show.
It's what Jim Cornette's been saying for years, you know, put a couple of characters that people want to be invested in, put on a bit of hard-hitting in-ring action, and people will watch it, and that's exactly what's happened. It's simple, it's basic, it does it so well. And we're a month in now, and even now, we're on Wednesday. I can't wait for Tuesday again. My routine now is coming from playing football on a Tuesday evening and getting in and watching Power. The clocks over here now in England, the clocks have changed, so we now get an hour earlier. Brilliant. Winter's going to be super.
It's perfect timing for us, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, you mentioned Cornette there, so we'll jump into the show. We'll jump into the fire. Jump into the fire. Well done, Mark. Jump into the fire.
To the fire.
Jump into the fire. So anyway, Cornette, Garley. We'll leave that in. Cornette and Garley welcome the audience to the show as per usual. They're joined by Jim Storm, who is, as we know, the national heavyweight title holder. He comes out, he's basically saying he's sick of proving himself week in after week after week after week after week, I think he said. And says
4 weeks.
4 weeks. He was on the form, he was on the ball. He was sick of proving himself, and he says that Aldis has been dodging him. So he has a little bit of a pop at Colt Cabana because Colt's been saying, "Oh well, I want to be involved in all this." So out comes Cabana on cue, more of a serious side to Colt with this rather than his happy smiley silly Colt Cabana from the previous weeks. He's come out. He says the title should rightly belong to him. He gives an explanation as to why it doesn't. Towards the end of him explaining that, Eli Drake comes out on cue, as per usual, to give everybody a pep talk, as he's done every week so far. He tells everybody what they actually want, and he does it with so much conviction, everybody's like, "You're right, like." he mentions Aldis. Aldis also joins the equation. What do you make of this angle so far, this get-together and this chat?
I think it's been needed. The whole James Storm and Nick Aldis thing. You know, we've had the promo already from James Storm about Nick Aldis, and we've had Eli Drake as well already play that devil's advocate role. And I think that's I really think that's going to be his angle going forward. I think he's just going to be an absolute shit stirrer and really, really stir the pot. If you remember the old Sean O'Hare gimmick back in the day in WWE, I think that it's going to be along those lines of really just getting into people's heads, because the last couple of weeks he's already done that. And whether it's to try and get someone like Tim Storm riled up to say, yeah, okay, I'll team with you, or whether it's just to cause a bit of aggro between people, I don't know what the underlying agenda is, but it seems to be his MO at the moment, if he's just really trying to shitster. Yeah. I'm all on board for it, though. I think it's brilliant. You said about Sirius Cabana, superb, loved it. I think he needs that little bit of depth to him.
Yeah.
For that, I really, really liked it.
I was just going to say, I thought it was good the way he came out, and it was straight to the point, serious side of Cabana. You know, you can tell it's Cabana. He's not putting on something he's not, but it was just nice to have that side to him.
Yeah, it wasn't a different gimmick for Cabana. It was Cabana we know, but he was a little bit miffed. He was a bit pissed off. I was fully on board with that. And finally, James Storm and Nick Aldis having that face, which is nice. It's in a month worth of program, and this is only show 4. I've been looking forward to it, and I've been wanting to see them face off. It seems like it's the two big names, and I've been wanting them to have that head to head clash. And so it was nice to finally see it. I do think it was maybe a bit of a mishmash of Storm wanting to be at Aldis, of Cabana wanting to be at Storm, and Storm wanting to be at Cabana. It felt like it was a bit all put it together, but I think it was done well. And again, it's one of those things of there's a few stories being told. It's only, I mean, this show was only 53 minutes long, so it was nice to see a few stories being developed in a short one segment. So yeah, I think it was a really good opening. I was fine with that. I thought it was good.
It was interesting that he came out with without his bit on the side as well.
She doesn't talk and she can't be seen anymore.
No, I know. It's going to be interesting. I'm really intrigued, though, now, to know what's going on with Camille. I'm really, really intrigued because her not making an appearance during this bit here. She hasn't come out today. Interesting.
Tweet her.
You can if you want. She might not say very much. Aldis, during that, I enjoyed the way it went into Aldis wrapping things up. I think that made a bit more clarity towards the end of what everybody's kind of agenda was. He basically called Storm a pisshead. So you come out here every week drinking. Maybe the drink's got to the point where I don't really know what your crack is anymore, Mr. Storm. He points out that Drake doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't do drugs. His only vice is he wants to be just like Aldis. I thought that was quite a fun
little promo. Yeah, it was good.
He suggests a 6-on-6 for later on in the evening, with the idea being that if he and Colt's team, presumably, as we know later on, it ends up being Aldis, Cabana, and Anderson, if they win, Colt gets a national title shot at Storm. If Storm team wins, Storm gets a shot at his world championship belt, but he must also get the national title. So it's quite interesting way that they're setting up here, because it's building nicely towards what's to come, hopefully. And the pay-per-view's what? It's a month and a half away, so it's interesting to see now in week 4 things starting to take shape with the direction of where they're kind of going. They're not giving too much away on each episode. They're making you think, what was that about? But it's nice when they do that, because the following episode and you go to it, okay, that's tidied up that bit and that's tidied up that bit, but it's left this door open now. So it's good to see what they're doing with all that. When Aldis is mentioning all this, somebody randomly in the crowd says Royal Rumble, which everybody completely no-sold, which was fantastic and moved on quite nicely from it. Fine. Also, when Aldis suggests a 6-on-6, the way he says it, Eli Drake looked at the crowd as if to say, that sounded a bit sexy. It's just the way they all said, you get your men and we'll have a nice 6-on-6 action. Storm finishes off by telling Aldis that his Jaguar might have been bumped by a 4x4 in the car park. Fair enough. Well, yeah, at least he's being honest about it. We're getting into the action now anyway, because Murdoch, get in! Big old Murdoch comes out to speak to Marquez. Really fun little promo, I thought this. He just basically said, right, tell you what it is. I'm here. I want an NWA contract. I don't know if I'm going to get one, but what I've suggested to NWA management is that I get Josephus, knack him, and then I get my contract. To which Josephus came out, spoke in riddles a bit. To which, what did he say again? He said something really interesting about, he said people's names back to front, basically. He sounded quite riddly, quite fun. To which Murdoch says, "Shut up, get your ass in the ring. We're gonna have a fight," and that led to the match being what it was. I thought it was just a good, fun sort of squash. Well, it wasn't really a squash, it was backwards and forwards, but it was a nice short fight. Big hosses lugging each other to bits. Ended with Murdoch kicking the salt out of Josephus's hands and finishing, what was it again? It was a second rope flying bulldog, I think he finished on for the win. Really fantastic, fun little match there that establishes that Murdoch is now part of the team, which I'm so happy with because I bloody love Murdoch, I really do. One really fun little bit that I enjoyed about this was that the announcer, when he was announcing Murdoch as the winner, he was coughing as well to put over the powder that had been kicked out of Josephus's hands.
That was really, really well done.
Little bits like that, man. Really, really good. And even the commentary team just sort of announced at the end, just doing a little cough and splutter into the microphone as they're talking about it. A fun little match, you know. There's not really too much to kind of to speak about within the match. It was just backwards and forwards, smashing each other about a bit. One thing I did really like in terms of what was doing in the match is Trevor Murdoch's short arm clotheslines, man. They looked painful.
Yeah, he channeled his inner Stan Hansen on those ones.
Didn't he just? Yeah.
I think what's nice with going into these matches is there's a little bit of build up, whether it's a short little video vignette beforehand or a little promo beforehand, and even just going back to the promo of Aldis and Storm whatever before, it leads you into that, well, who's going to win sort of mindset. You genuinely don't know. Josephus has been quite regular in leading into this. He looks like he's an established character going into it, so you thought, okay, he might have a little bit about him then, because he is being utilised a lot. Murdoch came into this losing to Ricky Stark beforehand, so you did think, well, all right, this could be Josephus' ascent, but at the same time, it's Trevor Murdoch, he's a big hard bastard, so he could well have him, and that seems to have been the case going with every single match. I can't think of one off the top of my head in the 4 weeks we've had so far where the match has been on and I immediately think, well, okay, this is just a put on match and who's going to win it. Every single match that has been on so far, including this week, I've genuinely not had a clue going into it who's going to come out on top. And yeah, I think that has just been one of the most refreshing things about the whole entire product so far. It was a brilliant finish. I really liked it. It was really old school, really what you wanted, you know, really what you wanted. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, as you say, the clotheslines were really, really stiff. Nice NWA, old school NWA, hard hitting action. A great way to start it. A great opening match.
What's up, y'all? This is the one and only Chocolate Thunder Willie Mack, and you're listening to Broke But Glorious. Hey, yeah.
Aaron Stevens comes out. Garley straight away. I'll avert my gaze. Which I thought was a bloody beauty online. And shortly followed as well by Aaron Stevens saying in the crowd, "This is not a blouse. It is a shirt."
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, you can only just wonder what he was trying to elicit from the crowd with that.
I thought this was an interesting segment, actually. I don't know if it really tickled me that much. I thought Stevens was great.
I think initially Stark spoiled it.
I think
his hand, his whole hand, putting his hand out and doing all that kiss me hand sort of thing. It was like, aren't you meant to be the face in this situation? You're meant to be the good guy on the people's side here, trying to have Stevens' life, and he ended up appearing more arrogant than Stevens did.
This is the thing, I'm not sure if he is necessarily meant to be the face. I can't quite work it out yet, because even the commentary team later on during the match did mention that Ricky Starks only cares about how he looks and things like that, you know, the vanity side of things. So I thought, is this just one of those kind of things where you get sort of two... But he's not really, I don't know, he's more of a sort of tweener. I don't really know what he is at the moment. I suppose they're moulding him, you know, he's finding out where he stands with it all. But the it, for whatever reason, it didn't quite work for me, this back and forth between the two of them, stood with Garley. It just, as you say, he held his hands out and it just didn't connect. It just didn't sort of gel so well. But, you know, God, that's such a minor criticism because
I think at this point now, we were saying the last couple of weeks that one of the real strong points of NWA, it's been, they played on the personalities of the characters as opposed to you're a good guy, you're a bad guy. And it is fine. It does work. But maybe just have a little bit of an alignment to one or the other. It doesn't all have to be great. It doesn't all have to be personality. Maybe just say, all right, I'm a bad guy with some good tendencies. I'm a good guy with some bad tendencies. Not everybody has to be right down the middle. And you don't have to have heels v heels and faces v faces all the time. Sometimes it is nice to have a little bit of definition, and maybe it's just something they need to watch out for a little bit going forward.
I can kind of see where they were going, what they were going for with this kind of exchange. I don't, in my opinion, like after watching it back, it seems to be that if they were trying the whole Ricky Starks come out thing, oh, you think that you're the dog's bollocks. Well, actually, I'm the dog's bollocks. Now you kiss my hand, kind of thing. I think they were going down that route, but maybe just didn't quite come over that way.
Because
I think if Starks had kind of been like, you know, the people are here to see me, I think you'll find a bit like a Rick Martel modelish kind of attitude to it all.
Whereas it felt like the way he came out was to sort of shut Stevens up on behalf of the people when he first appeared. It almost seemed like it was for us. Do you know what I mean? And then when he sort of did the whole kiss hand thing, it's like, okay, you're meant to, that's why I was saying you're meant to be the good guy here, because the way he was presented when he walked out to confront Stevens, it was with that sort of, oh, okay, he's the good guy. Finally, someone's here to shut him up. And then he did that. It's like, okay, no, he's not then. The slap was bloody gold, though. Yeah,
I was going to say, he pulled it back really well. I think that was just a bit of an awkward, even somebody in the commentary said awkward or something like that, or somebody in the crowd said awkward, where there was that bit of a stall holding his hand out. But him then slapping him, like, oh, it was a great slap. And you talk too much kind of comment as well. I thought that
really
worked very well.
Yeah, you can see Matthew Botchmania using that in his next one.
it was a lovely little segment. But that ending wasn't, so you know, it pulled it back, and again, such a minor criticism, really. Following that, Austin Idler promotes a drink called Kayfabe Cocktail and says, if you buy it, you drink it, you can get into the pants of the last next door. Pretty much is what that advert was.
I won't tell you the ingredients though, because that won't be kayfabe.
I mean, if you're gonna do like a silly throwaway vignette, then that's how you do it, isn't it, really?
I think it's probably been one of the best ones they've done so far, to be honest.
Well, it was great. I mean, especially after that one fell a bit flat last week with the whole the invisible hair thing. This one was brilliant.
Yeah, he brought it back.
And because they've done that, because they've done a fun one, and they don't overdo it. They do like what, one or two, just to break the show up, and they're all sort of 10 seconds long to 15 seconds long. There's nothing to them. They don't take too much time up or anything like that. But they're fun, and now I want to know what next week's one's going to be about. It's like, it's even little things like that where I'm interested in the bullshit pretend segments. I'm interested to know what they're going to do next week.
Yeah, what's the fake product next week?
Yeah. Now, we go from that, jump into a no-DQ tag team match between the Dawsons, Homicide, and Kingston. I mean, it was just big lads battering the shite out of each other. It reminded me so much of a typical kind of ECW tag team match with the Gangsters, for example. Like, everybody's outside battering each other, you know, smashing heads off poles, obviously not going too overboard, like ECW, but after all that, the way that they pulled it all round into the ring as well, that suplex on Kingston, for example, under the chairs, you felt that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your reference to an old ECW one, not just because they used weapons,
no, just the, but the way that they do it. The outdoor brawly bit.
Yeah, you can tell.
Between everybody, kind of.
Homicide and Kingston know the way around a hardcore match, so they know how to do that sort of stuff, and you can tell that. It's funny you say about a gangster sort of thing, because I read earlier on today the comparison of Kingston to New Jack, or a modern day one, without actually physically being New Jack, for like all the better reasons. He knows exactly what he's doing in that environment. He is such a shining star in the company at the moment that he's, everything he touches is gold. It was a brilliant tag team match. The promo he did last week, we don't even care about ourselves, so imagine what we can do to you, to the Dawsons, it just led so much up to that. And then when it was announced that they're going to be going at it in this match, I was well on board for it. And it did deliver as well. I mean, I don't know why they've given us it on this show, though. This was an Into the Fire match. Surely this is the match for the pay-per-view. So I have no idea what they're going to do for the pay-per-view now. But I'm so glad they gave us it.
Yeah, I've got an idea, because, well, it's a funny one, because I think apart from some of the highlight moments, as we mentioned there, with the suplexing of the chairs, the piling up of the chairs onto Homicide, just little things like that, you know what I mean? And then Wildcard coming out and interfering, making it quite confusing, like attacking both teams and then helping one of the teams then get the win, seemed a bit
yeah,
weird that means, and a bit confusing. And I think, well, the commentary said that themselves. So I think that is something it's bound to be something that clears up next week, if that makes sense.
Yeah, one of those exactly.
It was for a reason. Confused. It wasn't, yeah.
But for the good reasons.
It's yeah, like, confusing on say, purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm wondering if we end up going down maybe a multi-tag match kind of route for the pay-per-view business, maybe sort of like a three-way tag team match maybe, with all three teams battling it out.
Yeah, possibly.
You never know. It depends what happens. We've got another month and a half to go yet, so anything can happen between now and then. But it'll be interesting to see. Overall, generally, again, a good, fun scrap more than anything else. It was just a scrap. And it breaks up some of the general sort of old-school wrestling matches, if you know what I mean, well. Which leads us on to something, actually. I'm going to go to the next match here between Marty Bell and Ashley Vox. And I think that this was a vast improvement on last week's outing, if I'm going to be completely honest. I think Marty Bell, last week, we mentioned it, we struggled with her match. That particular match didn't really take it and do it for us, and it felt like a trainee match. She isn't. She's a veteran of the ring. You know, she's been around for quite a long time. And it goes to show you that arguably nerves can get the better of everybody, because I do think while the start of the match was a little bit slow for the first couple of minutes and you're finding the rhythm, I really personally believe that both of these wrestlers found their rhythm going into the match, and it flowed a lot better than Marty's last outing. What I did like at the beginning of the match was Alison Kay on the mic was well just being very candid, very fun promo, putting over both wrestlers. But she says, "Marty, I love you, you're a good friend of mine. You're just not ready for it yet." And I just thought, oh, that's scathing. the champion saying, you're a good egg, I really like you, you know I love you, but you're not ready for this level yet. And yeah. I just thought, mate, that's from a friend. A really natural kind of, I'm your friend, you know I love you, but you're not good enough. That's more wounding than your arch rival saying something like that, you know?
The thing is, though, she's absolutely bang on, right? It was a better match than last week's. It wasn't as good of a match as Kay's match, though.
No, it wasn't. You're right. I think Kay, at the moment, from the rest
she's of the... She's the standard bearer.
Yeah, she absolutely is, and that's why she's champion, in fairness. I think that goes to show. I think it's a bit difficult when you've got, like... a multitude of male wrestlers, obviously, on the show each week. So there's arguably a lot better male wrestling because of that, where there's one female match on each week at the moment. And, you know, you don't want to give your champion too many TV matches when you've got a pay-per-view to play for, you know? So it's one of those things that they're trying to see who wins. I think one of the things is, though, I thought there was a... I personally thought it was a much better match. I think it was interesting that Vox got the win there. I wasn't expecting that because I got the impression...
Yeah, line up for the ring match again. Yeah, I agree.
So maybe it's one of those things where Vox gets the match, but they're going to build Bell alongside. They're going to have to, or maybe they're just thinking, well, let's use Bell with Rosa because Rosa came out. Drums banging, that was interesting. That's the first time we've heard audio in any kind of wrestling match format at the moment. It freaked out Marty. She walked away. Nice little segment to sort of end the match and build to what's going to happen next, why she come out. It didn't really make... There was nothing too much was given away. She didn't come out and kick anybody's heads, you know, make anybody, you know, look lesser than her or anything. She just came in and said, "Do you want to shake my hand?" And Marty was like, "Nah, you're all right."
Almost looked like that they may have had a history where she sort of looked and then quite quickly got out the ring, and then as she was leaving the ring, going back to the curtain, like sort of kept a gaze on her and looked back at her, almost as if she has a past with her or something like that. Maybe if not, it was just a really good debut for her. It just looked like she had real character about her, and I think so far, I think so far that it's only been Kay that's had that, some real character about her.
Yeah.
Whereas now that we've seen Rosa come in, even though the character so far is limited to face paint and that Latina to background, it's still something. It's something to play on, and I think that's where the direction needs to be going.
Yeah, we've got a character in her, and I'm interested to see what she's about. Simple as that, really. And she's come out pseudo making she tries to shake my hand. Everybody's like, don't trust her. Marty's like, all right, yeah, you're all right. I don't think I'm going to. walked off, as you say, I kept the gaze on her. So it's painting pictures of pathways of what's potentially to come. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a positive week for women's wrestling this week.
It was a step in the right direction.
Definitely.
I still think it was the weakest match on the show this week, but it was better than last week. I still think it has some way to go, though, to beat the first match with Allison Kane, though.
I think that's the thing. They've bowled that one out, and it's difficult to maybe be to sort of reach that level. But the limited, you know, to one women's match a week, it's going to be difficult for them to do that compared to the other matches that are on there and where they rank in terms of the Storm and Aldis match on week one. You know what I mean? There's a lot more scope.
I don't want them to go down the route of it just being a tokens women's match. Or that.
Agreed. And I think...
Now, for the sake of being a women's match, even though it could possibly be the drizzling shits, i.e. last week, they could establish themselves a women's division. There's a lot of really good talent out there. Don't just do it for the sake of doing it. If you're going to do it properly. Make some characters like you have with the guys. Get some good matches on there. You've got a good champion. You've introduced Thunder Rosa. Let's build on that and let's push on from there.
I'm really interested to see what they can potentially get out of Rosa and the champion, to be honest. I reckon that could be something. That's no offence to the others, it's just the one that I've got most intriguing at the moment.
They're already the two most intriguing characters.
Yeah. So moving on now to Ricky Starks versus Aaron Stevens following from the promo earlier on that we mentioned. An enjoyable match, just back and forth, a bit of one-upmanship here and there. It was just a good, solid match. Starks winning with the roll-up, I found surprising again. It was the second match of the night where I didn't think that was a surprise win.
Stark going through the 2007 WWE roster like there's no tomorrow. Trevor Murdoch and Aaron Stevens. But the ending was really good. I think it said more about Stevens than it did for Starks, to be fair. He went to do the slap and the scream and
that was brilliant.
It cowered away. It was brilliant. It was... Stevens is just making himself out to be a good chicken shit heel. And this is what I mean when I was saying that you do need some level of alignment. Not everybody needs to be grey. He's just an out-and-out, like I say, chicken shit heel, and he does it so, so well. And that's why, as we see with every promotion, you see some people come, you see some people go. If he carries on doing that, the only reason he would go if he goes to a bigger place, because they won't be getting rid of him, because he is just so good, good.
Definitely worth his salt. I mean, even that sort of cowering from the slap, it brings so much more of a highlight to the slap earlier on in the show and why that was so impactful, and the way he reacted to that slap earlier on the show, which said, my God, that bloody hurt. He didn't want to kind of go through that again. Just little bits where it just ties together. Very simple stuff, but just so effective as to why he cowered away from it. And then Ricky, obviously, from there, gets the sort of roll-up, the cheeky win.
And dabbed, I think, halfway through the pin.
The outro of that match was arguably one of the funnest things of the show for me. Stevens just said no, as the crowd said yes, and he said no. The crowd said yes, and he said no. That could have gone on for another 2 minutes.
It could have, the crowd were not going to get bored of doing that with him either.
I wouldn't have got bored of watching it either because of the way he was able to do it.
Yeah, so good. He wasn't just getting angry, just going, no, no. He was saying the word no brilliantly.
Yeah, every time. Like, it followed on from the last one. Just like, no, then no, then no.
No.
No. Oh, just, I know, it's...
He's brilliant. He is worth his weight in gold.
We're tickled by people responding to a crowd by saying the word no. Well done, MWA. If it's Aaron Stevens. And from there, finally, we're leading on to the main event of the night, which was Team Aldis, which consisted of Mr. Aldis, Colt Cabana, and Mr. Anderson versus Mr. Storm and Wildcard. I mean, you could tell going into this was going to be... We just knew that this is going to be a very, very good, solid match. All six of those wrestlers, they kind of epitomise for me what NWA is about at the moment. They've all got a character within there. I'm interested in seeing more from Mr. Anderson over weeks to come, because I know he gets a certain rap. You either love him or you hate him, I think, with that. He's a bit Marmite-y for a lot of people. I think when he's on, he's on. He can turn it on really, really well. And he's been quite quiet so far. He's maybe just letting everybody sort of settle, and then maybe he'll step up and you know, be more of the Anderson that we know from years gone by.
You're thinking of a heel turn on Cabana, aren't you?
I think it needs to probably come.
He works better as a heel, I think. He's a good cocky heel. It's surprising seeing him playing this sort of backseat role. Mm-hmm. I am quite surprised at that. Coming into this match, I want now, probably in the whole of NWA right now, I don't think I want anything more than a heel James Storm with a stable alongside Wildcard. Yeah. I think they really look the dog's bollocks. Yeah. And I really, really, really want James Storm to go full-blown heel now.
Yeah.
And I want him and Aldis to have a proper personal bloodbath feud, because I think they could both really pull it off. Obviously, Aldis to come out on top, because he'll always be my champion. But I think Storm is just so tailor-made now to be that hard-hitting bastard heel who can have Wildcard alongside him. They've got some gold with them. They've got the national championship. They've got the tag team titles there. And he's gunning for that world title of Aldis. I think it could work brilliantly.
Well, now, I mean, what I'm looking at it from my point of view, I think you're right there. I think that's a stable, like, in the making. I think it's there, isn't it?
It has to be. Seen it once. I just want to see it again. I want to see it next week. I want to see the week after that. And I want to see the week after that.
They could run right over the whole thing, couldn't they? Just being that sort of stable. I think what's interesting is, we'll quickly mention the match first, in the sense of, if nothing else, just really, really fun. All six guys in there doing what they do really, really well. Just a fun six-person fight, really. It was really, really good. Cabana winning with the Superman pin. I thought that was excellent.
That was
brilliant. That's typical Collier.
It makes me think now, who took it from what? Did Grado take it from Cabana, or was Cabana taking it from Grado? Not the Superman thing, but the style. That sort of strut around the ring and all that sort of stuff. I don't know what came first, but Grado nails it. He is so fun when he wants to be fun. And has proven earlier on in the show, when he's serious, it makes you sit and take notice. Like, oh, now he's not playing about. Now he actually means business. Case in point, at the end of the match, when he was leaning out the ring and giving the death stare at James Storm, you thought, okay. He's really wanting to give him a bit of it. Now he's really going to take it out on him. And like I say, I do want Storm and Aldis to meet, and I want them to have a real world title feud. But I'm more than happy having Cabana take a serious seat for a little bit, and him and Storm having a bit more of a personal vendetta. I think that there's a lot of mileage in that.
I'm quite happy with the idea of Cabana somehow overcoming the odds, and because that's the way it looks like to me. Cabana's the underdog to Storm. It just feels like that because of the characters that they've got and the power line, if you like. Cabana somehow overcoming the odds, maybe through some kind of distraction where Storm ends up losing the belt to him, to pass that belt on, and then so then Storm can then focus on his feud with Aldis, and then that carries on the way it's going to go. But also, that might lead into Cabana being the title and Anderson sort of doing the turn and then thinking, I want my title shot now. And do you know what I mean? Kind of going down that route with it. It might sort of filter well to that.
In my mind, I don't want Storm to just abdicate the title.
No, I don't want him to either. I think
he needs to drop the title. Yeah. I think he will. If he does drop it, I think he should drop it to Aldis. But what I would like to see is Cabana being the happy-go-lucky guy that we know. But when the subject matter of Storm comes on, He turns it and he does go serious. Like, oh no, I'm fun loving Cole Cabana, but this is personal. This is something different. It gives him that dimension, that extra dimension again of what NWA have done so far, of that personality in their characters. And I think that adds that extra layer on for Cabana. He's the fan favorite. He's the happy go lucky guy. But when James Storm's in the equation, nah, mate, I'm a CV. I'm going to knock him. I'm going to take that title. And I think that then gives, like I said, that gives Cabana that belt, that gives it, frees Storm up, and then that can maybe allow Storm to pivot and go towards Aldis for the world title. That's what I would like to see anyway. That's fantasy booking at its finest from my side of things, but I think I think if you had a few weeks out of that, even coming out of the pay-per-view, with still something to go from that, to me that writes itself, because those three guys in particular could work magic together.
You could still even do some bits leading up to it as well, because like, again, we've got another month and a half to go, but a bit of like a whodunit thing where Cabana gets attacked and it turns out it's by Storm's henchmen, and little bits and that you can throw in there where that leads to the official announcement of Storm and Wildcard being a faction, if you like. Because at first, you know, Cabana's like, it was Storm, must have been Storm, but then he's got proof it wasn't him. All that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, you were saying about Cabana being the underdog, him having to overcome obstacles to get the Storm in that title. So he's going to have to overcome trying to get through the tag team champions who are his henchmen to get there. Or something. Obviously, there's so many ifs and buts going into there, but We now have a main event scene, a proper main event scene.
Yeah.
Which we've been looking for. It. Hell,
I know, sorry, mate. Sorry. I was just going to say there, just when you mentioned there about kind of knowing where everybody's going, the only one where I'm a bit confused with is what's Eli Drake going to do? Apart from come out and give everybody a pep talk next week.
Stir the shit. And he does it so well.
I know, and I'm just waiting to find out when he's. A time's going to come where he's going to go now, and that's when.
Yeah.
That's when he makes his move. It's just going to be really interesting to know what that's going to be.
Again, talking a complete armchair fantasy booking, but you could even have branch off rivalries coming out of this. So Eli Drake stirring the pot between them all. Anderson being Cabana's best mate, not liking what Eli's doing, so them two maybe have a little grudge or something like that. There's a couple of branch offs that work from that sort of thing. All of a sudden you've got three or four rivalries that you can spin around just from this one small collective, and all of them would be really intriguing, because all of these guys know exactly what they do, and all of these guys know how to build it up, how to just feed you that little bit and just keep you wanting more. And again, there's so many things that each of these guys do well that suit this NWA product to a T, because they give them precious little time in this 50-odd minutes that they have, and they just make it work. And they've done it, every single one of them have just utilised it brilliantly, especially this week, brilliantly.
Absolutely, fully agree with that last comment there, last statement. Well, we'll be watching again next week. We hope you've enjoyed this little roundup that we ramble on about, and we hope you join us again next week to listen to us ramble a bit more about it. You can check us out at Grapple Arcade on Twitter. You can also check us out at BBG Wrestling on Twitter. And also, you can check us out at bbgwrestling.com, where you can get links to all of our shows, all of our previous reviews of NWA Power, along with a lot of hosts of other interviews with Legends of the Ring, such as Sid Vicious, such as Austin Idol, who is on tonight's show yet again, such as Kevin Sullivan and Ahmed Johnson, for example. Go and check that out. Thanks again for joining us, Rich. We'll catch you next week, and stay tuned, everybody. Cheers.